A blonde and a brunette walk into a room, to talk about Jesus, exploring God's word, tackling topics no one likes talking about, discussing biblical truths, and dodging bad theology on the way. This is Her Theology. Hello, ladies, and welcome to another episode here with Her Theology. I am really excited that you are tuning into this episode. I am very fortunate enough to have my beautiful friend Nadia joining us today from overseas to share a bit of her experience. But for those of you that are new, my name is Cass, and then I have Kirst, my beautiful co-host here.
Hello.
And as you can hear, there's a bit of a disparity in audio. We are doing this all via, what's the word, Kirst, when you're in another place and I'm in another place?
Distance,
that's right. Thank you for technology. Because we are still in COVID lockdown, so we're not sure how long this will go for. So the next few episodes, I'm sure, might sound a bit different, but we hope that you can still be engaged and get as much as you normally would out of our episodes. So Nadia, yeah. Are you there?
I am. Hi, everyone.
Yes.
Hey.
Thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it. Nadia is a mum with two little ones, so she knows all the feels. Her little ones are in bed right now while she's overseas with the time difference.
As if they're in the same country as her. They're not overseas from her.
They're in the next room, and let's hope they don't wake up.
Yes. So between us, there's how many kids? Six, seven, eight. Eight kids that we're having to keep distracted for the next hour while we do this interview. So pray for us. But first of all, let's start with what have you learnt new this week, ladies? So Nadia, do you want to kick us off with something new that you've learnt?
Sure. So I'm actually really blessed to be on what we call like leave or a little bit of a break from the field where we're working, and we're actually with family in the US. And it's been hay season on the farm. My husband's family have a farm here, and they've been collecting a lot of hay bales. And I have learned that hay bales are very heavy, and I am not very strong, and I need to work on my muscles.
How do they grow hay? You don't grow hay. How do they make hay?
Well, grass grows and sunshine shines and rain falls, and then it grows, and then you cut it, and then you bale it, and you pick it up. And
is that literally it? So it's, I thought it was like a special form of, so it's just normal grass. Like,
well, they do put the hay seeds, and they seed it every now and then. I'm probably not the one to ask about these details. I've mainly been doing the childcare because they've realized that I'm probably the weakest hay carrier and the best at. There's actually another two families on the farm. So there are seven kids in total. So I take the seven kids, and the people go and carry hay.
That's impressive.
But I have been doing some pump classes with one of the ladies on the farm to build my muscles, because it's been obvious they need a bit of work.
That's excellent.
Oh, that's great. It's actually quite funny because I always think of you overseas. So Nadia works with her family in South Sudan, and I always think of myself, like, I always think of you as really strong and fit, because I just think it would be manually full on as well over there. But there you go. So learn something new. Kirst, what about you?
Oh, look, I have got a very good one today. This is going to be interesting. You know how surgery, like when you go into surgery at the hospital, how it's called theater?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That is because they used to sell tickets for people to watch actual surgery as entertainment.
No.
Yeah, no. It is. Legit. That is a true fact that I learned.
What, medical students or...
No,
anyone?
I think it was like anyone. There was this guy. Oh, now I can't remember what his name is, but like he like used to do it. I'm gonna find out.
Yeah, I need some facts.
I should explain, because we haven't done your proper intro yet, Nadia. Nadia is a qualified GP, Australian doctor.
So it's absolutely perfect for this.
It is.
Very interesting.
It's in context.
It's like back when they didn't have TV and all of that kind of thing. So, you know, like it makes sense.
Yeah,
They needed entertainment.
Yeah. So they watched Blood and Guts and everything. Yeah.
I don't think like theatre is that interesting. Often it takes hours and it's quite boring.
Well, I think it was like this guy was like trying to have this thing where he could do it the fastest he could do it. And so made it into like a bit of an entertainment thing. Like, because, yeah, surgery takes a really long time normally. I know this sounds absolutely ludicrous.
Slightly horrifying.
Yep. Oh, anyway, great. Your turn, Cass.
Okay, well.
I've got to find out who told me that because I need some background. I'll come back.
I'm thinking as well, you know what, I'd rather watch a surgical thing. I'd rather watch something happening in surgery than hangings, which they used to do back then, right?
Oh, so true. I do not like hangings.
Me. Have you seen any recently? Or?
No, I mean on TV. It was always the thing that I used to peer my head around the corner when mum and dad were up late and I'd be like, there's a hanging. I mean, not that they were, but in my mind, that was what was always on the TV. It probably wasn't, but anyway.
Oh, amazing. So I learned, well, actually, I don't know. I mean, part of this probably isn't a fact. It's more an assumption, but I saw a post on Instagram the other day and it was a lady who was saying any babies, so obviously because Kirsten and I have had a baby this year in 2021, here's some cool stats. They will enter a new century in, so 2100. In 2039, which feels so long away, they'll be 18 and they'll probably study the 1900s in school, which we were born in and we know about. Think about it that way.
Yeah, that's pretty weird.
And in 2051, they'll turn 30. 30.
Why are you thinking about these things?
It's just cool, I thought. Anyway.
That is pretty crazy to think about. Okay, side note, I've just Googled it and I'm correct. Early dedicated rooms for surgical procedures were called operating theatres because they literally were theatres built in a gallery style for public observation.
Wow.
That is off a website. So Google it and you'll see. Isn't that crazy?
And we can confirm they don't teach that in medical school. Hey, Nadia?
Well, I might have been sleeping through that particular point.
Oh, amazing. Okay, so let's get stuck in. So today I want to formally now introduce you, I guess, or give you a bit of a bio behind Nadia. So Nadia is a beautiful friend of mine that I met through church here on the coast. But she and her husband have a wonderful heart for Africa, in particular South Sudan, and they have been on the field working practically and helping the people there. And they have two little children as well, a little boy who's 5, is that right?
Yep.
Yep. And a little girl who's now 3?
Yep.
My goodness, that's going fast. And I just wanted Nadia to come on today and have a chat and just share her heart for mission, give us a bit of background on like how she got onto mission, how long she's been on the field for, but also what it looks like to be serving God with your family in tow. And I know with that comes a lot of sacrifices, but also comes a lot of joy. And I think it's really encouraging for us to always hear from other believers that are willing to count the cost, to follow Jesus and to also really practically help people overseas, particularly in developing countries. And so with Nadia's expertise as a GP and then her husband, who's very, very, very skilled. I always say he's an engineer, but he's not, is he? He's a construction manager. Is that right?
I don't know what you want to call him. He's a little bit of this and a little bit of that. He does a bit of everything.
Yeah.
He does electrical stuff, solar stuff. He does a lot with dirt, makes buildings with a lot of dirt.
he's amazing.
He's a clever one.
Yes, yes. I like, yeah, rewiring and creating inventions and it's amazing. Very skilled.
He's currently, his project as we rest, somewhat rest in at home here is he's cut a tractor in half and a little mini truck in half, joined them together and made an electric vehicle with solar panels on the top with a little dump truck.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like our family vehicle slash his work vehicle for over there slash a vehicle that can get us through any kind of roads because it's got big tractor wheels at the back. It's kind of cool. Yeah. I wish I could share you guys a photo of it. Anyway,
yeah. He is, I can vouch, a mastermind and an inventor. So yeah. I can vouch for that. I would say if you guys weren't working on the field, I feel like he'd be working for somewhere like Google and being paid the big bucks to create new things. I feel like that would be where he would be at. Mm.
That's not him though.
No, I know, I know. Okay, so Nadi, maybe do you want to give us a bit of a lowdown, a bit of the history between well, what you've been doing and how you kind of got called onto the field and how you ended up doing what you're doing, and also maybe a bit of a history as well as to how you met your husband and how that all came together.
Wow. Okay. So let me know if I haven't answered all of those questions. Okay.
And that's a big question, sorry.
Yeah, I came to know the Lord Jesus when I was 16, but the Lord had me on a journey way, way before that and had so many people in my life who sowed different little seeds, kingdom seeds, I like to call them, into my heart. But, yeah, an actual decision to follow Jesus was made when I was 16. And very early on I had a heart for missions and a heart for people in the developing country. And I know one thing in those very early Christian days was kind of this seeking God. God, what do you want me to do with my life? I want to do something special. And I felt this very like kind of this sense from him that was like, well, I've given you a brain and you better use it. So the first task of following him was just actually studying at school. And I got into medicine and did my undergraduate medicine at Newcastle. And through medical school, I was really interested in missions and took every opportunity possible to get engaged with mission trips or conferences that were kind of linking me up with stuff in developing world. And initially, I actually had this huge burden that like I, at one of these conferences, I heard about all these people in Africa dying of HIV. And I was like, I don't care enough. I need to care more. And I remember telling my friends like this issue that I felt really bad that I didn't care enough about these big problems. And she said to me, it's not until you build a relationship with someone with HIV that you'll care more. And so I remember just praying simply, God, help me to know someone who is HIV positive and call them my friend and help me to care more. So an opportunity arose in third year of medicine to go to Zimbabwe. And that started like a long relationship with a group of HIV positive teenagers and children called Champions for Life. And I went back to Zimbabwe 4 or 5 times and started up a little organization to fund these champions, we've called them. And I was also had opportunities to do medical electives there, and also tried to work as kind of a resident after I'd graduated there for a little while. And God answered my prayer, and I had friends who were HIV positive, and it changed things dramatically when like it wasn't this situation from afar that was faceless, but it was a situation where it was a friend who I loved. And
it's so helpful. Sorry. Because I know like on Facebook you'll see, or you know, different socials, you'll see different things pop up and like donate now and this cause and this cause and this cause. And I can totally relate when you said, I just don't care enough. And it's like, I know that I should care about these things, but it's just like, it's almost just like there's so much need, and that's so true. We need to pray that we'll actually meet somebody in the need, and then you can actually help them. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, we need to have a face behind all of these big issues to be able to link us and make it more real. Mm. Otherwise it's not, it's hard for it to be real and for us to genuinely care about these things.
Yeah.
Some of these kids like who I love died. Some of these kids really struggled in life and were orphans because of HIV. And I really started caring deeply about, you know, that issue. And during my last trip to Zimbabwe, I ended up going to a little mission school in Mozambique. And then my elective from that mission school was to South Sudan. And during that time, for a few days, I met my husband who was building a school in South Sudan. And then I went back to Zimbabwe to finish my time in Zimbabwe. But we had kept in contact. And then I wasn't allowed back into Zimbabwe. So really long story short, I ended up back in South Sudan and we got engaged and married about a year after meeting. And so I was really like, I remember praying, God, I don't want to just meet a man who's interested in missions. I want to meet a man who's doing it. And God gave me the extreme.
Oh, yes.
I thought God gives you the extreme in a lot of prayers that you're praying, actually.
I don't know. I always feel like they're very simple and raw. But anyway, but yeah, so anyway, when I was engaged to him, I was back up in South Sudan because of visa issues in Zimbabwe and had a beautiful opportunity to be engaged with lots of different healthcare activities in South Sudan, from training nurses to doing traditional birth attendant trainings to working at one of the mission hospitals, serving at some of the clinics, and then also we were actually living at a children's home, so just looking after some of the kids there, and we had a few really malnourished kids who just needed a lot of intense care. And I just feel like God gave me a really broad taste of all the opportunities and areas that this health training that he'd given me could be used in practical ways to show his love in a very, very needy place. Mm-hmm. So I experienced kind of doing mission as a single, then engaged, then married, then one kid, then two kids. Now it's 10 years later since Chris and I first met, and we're still in South Sudan. We've had a few stints back in Australia, but God has continued to day by day gently lead us and continue to ask us to follow. And it's hard, and it's also wonderful and a gift and a privilege. And
So how long have you been operating or been on the field now? Like, how many years in total roughly have you been in Africa or serving?
Well, when I first started in Zimbabwe, that was 2007, but most of the time between 2007 and 2011, I was in Australia doing short-term trips. And then after we got married in 2013, 2014, we joined a mission organization called Pioneers, and then we started serving in a more official long-term capacity. So
you've been on the field for about 10 years though, like
probably on and off, something like that.
And so, I mean, we're talking about extreme answers to prayer as well. I love how Nadia, this is something people might pick up as they're listening to this interview, is that Nadia is incredibly graceful and humble, but she has some crazy, crazy stories. And one of them, am I remembering correctly, the way you met your husband is that you kind of like walked around a corner and bumped into him, sort of thing? Into it, like not exactly. You expected it, or
I actually had gastro at the time.
Oh, I guess that's extreme.
So you chucked up on him, right?
No, but I remember not wanting dinner that night, and he was just sitting out, and I had a long chat to him that night for a long time, and so I don't know, it wasn't that romantic how we met, and I thought that getting into a relationship with someone who I met in South Sudan was way too complicated. So I wasn't that, you know, I was like, this like is an option really, but maybe it is. And then I remember leaving South Sudan thinking, oh, I should have chatted a bit more to him or made it a little bit more obvious. I thought he was quite nice. anyway, the Lord kindly helped.
Yeah. And so I think that's something, I think talking about, like, so I love that when you're starting off your story and you're talking about, you know, you became a Christian and you really wanted to have a heart to change people, and you said to God, you know, I want to go make a change for I'm summarizing poorly, but I love that you said you got a brain, so you need to use it. So you went and studied. And I think there's a really important lesson for a lot of us, because we often go, oh, I want to serve you, Lord. I want to go do something for you. And we jump straight in without sometimes putting the time and the resources in to upskill ourselves to be able to make an impact.
Good class. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. And I really love the patience in that story, Nadia, of how that would have been hard having it on your heart.
Because that would have been a lot of years as well, doing doctors.
Yeah. Yeah. And
what was like, that process?
Let's forget, like, it's not just about this kind of vague destination of being in Africa helping people. It's like daily making the decision to follow Jesus and following him in the daily decisions and going, you know, Lord, this is, you know, this is where I think we're going together. Please continue to guide me daily. And I remember one time, like in second year med school, and being bogged down in biochemistry and really not wanting to do biochemistry and thinking like, I need to be going out now. And like, I want to go to the mission field now. And then it was just after, you know, that time of being a bit confused about med school and whether it was really the right path for me, in between second and third year was when I went to Zimbabwe and I met this Christian doctor who was just so incredible in the way that he ministered God's love in his daily medical work. And I think God was very intentional in linking me up with that doctor and showing me, this is what you can do with this, and you need to be patient, and you need to see the opportunities now in med school. Like, you know, it's not just this destination in 10 years' time. It's right now, every day. See the students that you're, you know, working with, or mum, see the kids who you're discipling day in, day out. It's like, it's not always about this big grand destination in the future. Because, it's all this kind of in the daily ordinary. He's always asking us to, as we go, share his love.
Yes, I love that, Nadia, because that is a really good reminder for all of us. We might have something we're working towards, or we're waiting for an opportunity to share the gospel when actually we have it right here in our day, right now with who we are, with our neighbour, with our children, like you said, whoever. So how do you go approaching sharing the gospel when you're a GP? I know the practical side of things, like you are working very practically with people and with the healthcare system there, within the healthcare system there. But what does it look like for you guys on mission in South Sudan? Because obviously, you know, you're both Christians. What does church look like? What does it look like to minister to those around you in the midst of all this practical help that you're giving as well?
Yeah, good question. Like, a lot of our days do look in many ways very ordinary. And I really feel in an area where we are, where the area that we're serving in now has been in civil war for most of the last 50 years. And so a lot of these people have just known conflict. And, you know, someone our age has only had a few years of actual peacetime in their whole life. And so families have had so much upheaval due to war and conflict. Marriages have struggled. A lot of husbands have been out being soldiers, you know, so many people. And I think where we're at right now, a lot of our ministry is just like living an open home and having people into our home and seeing them, letting them see us do family and kind of the guts of our daily life, letting them, you know, welcoming them in. And I love, there's a scripture that talks about, we loved you so much that we shared not only the gospel but our lives as well.
Yes,
Thessalonians. In Thessalonians 2:8. Is it First Thessalonians or second? I think it's first. I think that's a really important scripture to our family is, you know, we need to show love in the way that we welcome and open our homes. And, yes, there's hospital work and there's construction work for my husband, but we also like I was just laughing, a few weeks before we left, I counted how many people were having at our home for lunch, and there was 29 people eating for lunch that day, which is kind of most weekdays. And wow. I don't cook for them. I get other ladies to cook for us, but you know, we really want to have an open home where people can come in and see how we do daily life. And in a culture where husbands don't do that much or engage with the family that much, I think Chris being engaged with family life and engaged with the kids is a huge testimony. All the ladies there think I've got the best husband in the whole world. I tell him he has it pretty easy to score brownie points on that side of the world. But so it's, you know, the daily stuff and the daily way that we care for people, because, you know, a lot of people just pop up to our house with, you know, feeling sick, and, you know, there's a hospital 300 meters away. How do I care for them and love them in all of those little moments when I'm busy? And being interruptible, I think, is something I've really had to learn in that context, because there's a lot of daily interruptions. And yeah, then there's also these moments where at the hospital, you know, in outpatients, I get to pray with a patient who's struggling with different things, and those moments are really sweet as well. But, you know, I think all of our lives and all of our ordinary lives, God wants to use to be an example to others. And I think that's something we really want it, our daily lives, to model his kingdom. Yeah. As far as the church goes, in where we are, there's a lot of different tribal groups, and many of the tribal groups have not ever had access to kind of scripture, and there's no known believers in a lot of those tribes. Where we are, there are some believers, and there's actually been a few new churches that have cropped up since we've been in our new area where we've been for the last year and a half. So we've just been kind of partnering with those two new churches, and alternate weeks going to those churches, and sometimes having opportunities to engage in, you know, whether it be preaching or, you know, children's ministry or women's groups or Bible studies and things like that. So it's been beautiful that we haven't started this, but we've been able to come alongside and help those who have started things.
Yeah, great. And have you found like they're responsive when you're sharing the gospel? Because it's quite unfamiliar for a lot of us to hear, well, they've never heard the gospel ever. You know, that's, I mean, in the West, there's a lot of people that may not know the real story of the Bible or understand the message, but they've generally heard of Jesus or something. They're familiar at least with the idea.
I think currently my language is not good enough to go deep enough with people who have absolutely no church background. And I think that's where I would love to get better at language, but I also know that kind of discipling those around us who have got some basic church knowledge, the local believers, so that they can go out, is something that we're really kind of passionate about. And, you know, a lot of those people who are more engaged in church just happen to speak better English as well. So that's, but there's many tribes who just, particularly in the Western area, we're more kind of in the Eastern area. The Western area has a lot of tribes with no known believers. So that's an area that we would love to kind of maybe in the future have an opportunity to serve in, but we'll just see what the Lord does.
So Nadia, you've got a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old, and obviously you've had them in the last 5 years.
Good maths.
Thank you. So did you give birth over there? Was that over here? How did that all work?
Was it planned? Was it? Yeah.
Well, no, my mum was really not keen on me giving birth at the first mission hospital that we were serving at when I was pregnant with Manny. So she came and escorted me home. She worked with me on the maternity ward for the last 2 weeks.
And wow. Made sure you get home. She was really passionate about making sure that
my mum's also a doctor. It didn't help that the first C-section that she helped me with it was an emergency C-section and we almost lost the mother and the baby. We didn't. Ooh. And the electricity went out.
Oh my goodness.
Both resuscitations. It went out twice. So wow. She, after that particular C-section, she just looked at me and said, yeah, right, I'm bringing you home.
Yeah. Wow. And then you came home for the 3-year-old as well?
So we came home for both deliveries.
Yeah. And so how are your kids going with it? Because obviously in some senses the lifestyle that you're living over there is all they've ever known, but then of course you come back to the US so they do know that something else out there exists. How are they coping with life?
And just to give the listeners a bit of context, when you're answering that, could you also give a bit of context as to what life is like over there? Because I know you're humble, but they live currently in a mud hut storage container style house. So it's very different to what it is for us here.
Yeah. I think the kids are doing pretty well. And I, you know, we need to trust God with that, with our children's future. And for me, this has been a huge thing. It's like, because they're our most precious thing. But with them, my 5-year-old, he has lived more of his life. He lived 2 years in a refugee camp. And then he's lived a year and a half in our current location. And he's traveled a lot across different continents. Mm-hmm. And it depends how you tell the story. Like, I could tell the story like it's been really hard and things like that, but I actually think he's doing really well. Currently, mm-hmm. he's speaking the trade language, and then he's also speaking, which is Arabic, and he's also speaking a little bit of the tribal language, and he's got great friends there. Amazing. Just a few, but great friends who don't treat him as anything foreign. And he does struggle with things. He doesn't like the preschool there. I don't blame him. and you know, but coming back here, he's just played beautifully with his cousins and, you know, of course they've rumbled and got, you know, cranky at each other. But, you know, I think he's doing okay. I just remember when I was pregnant with him, like the Lord telling me that I needed to trust him with this child, and that he was graced to be part of our family. And same with my daughter, that she is graced to be part of this adventure, and we're not just husband and wife taking our children on mission, but we are mission family. And so I really want to be a family that serves together, and when they get older, engage them in decisions that need to be made and be praying together about, you know, decisions, and always talking about the things that are hard. And they will have unique struggles. I am very aware of that, but trying to train and also love them through that is something I just pray that God gives me the grace for, and I know it that he will.
I think that's actually really helpful, like, way to talk about it, like being every single member is on mission. It's not just you guys are with us because we had you, but you know, you've all got your own interactions, you've all got your own people that you're building relationships with, and that's only going to grow and grow and continue. So I think that's actually a really helpful way to speak about it.
Like, I look at our the last place where we were in the refugee camp, and like the very fact that I was a mum with a baby just opened up all of these doors to have these relationships with these ladies, and the way that that he just loved and cared for, like, it loved in his own unique, you know, 1-year-old, 2-year-old way, like yeah, and there was a way that I could enter into community in such a unique way. Like, we cook on charcoal. So, you know, a lady would see me trying to flap my charcoal stove whilst my baby was screaming, and she'd come in and, you know, say, you take your child and I'll get your stove started. And, you know, to, like, we were just welcome to new baby event, like, different celebrations in community because we were a bit more like them because we were family. Whereas a lot of people come into a lot of these contexts a bit less family, a bit more kind of NGO and a bit more of a foreigner.
Yeah. But
family kind of helps to break down some of these barriers that puts the power distance and that, oh, you're so other than us. Yeah. So,
I never thought of it that way, Nadia. That is really powerful. And I'm not going to lie, I was crying a little bit then when you said, you know, it's not just your husband and you on mission, it's your family on mission. Like, I think that's really helpful because I think a lot of people can be on the outside looking in and go, they shouldn't bring their kids or they should bring their kids, or we all have different judgments and thoughts, but that's really powerful to know. Actually, it helps bridge a gap and God's going to use those children in a really mighty way that you wouldn't expect to cross.
That you wouldn't be able to do, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's really
children don't put up the walls that us adults do. Yeah. Children, they just love in a totally unique, beautiful way.
I mean, if we were just like bawling our eyes out, crying all the time, probably not many people would want to interact with us. It's amazing what God does.
And so, like, did you maybe have, on that note, you know, maybe some encouragement or maybe some lessons you've learned about being, you know, in your calling, I guess, and being on mission with children in tow? Is there any like kind of little valuable lessons you've learned that you could share or encourage
I think choosing to bring children into that kind of setting, you have to make sure that they know that they're more important than the missionary work that, you know, and it sounds odd, but they don't become just the children in tow, but they are a loved part of the journey. And so for me, I need to prioritize their schooling and their daily nurturing in some ways even more than I do in the West, because I don't have grandma around and I don't have all these other opportunities to send them to daycare and school and all these kind of things. I think I've just realized that I need to be, so much more engaged and intentional and purposeful in the way that I bring up my children. And I feel like it's made me so much more prayerful because I'm just so desperate for Jesus to be with them and to nurture them through this, because I know that there's hard parts of their upbringing and there's also beautiful, rich parts. And I long for like their upbringing to make them more compassionate, aware adults.
Well, I mean, the things that they've already seen in their short lives is more than, you know, the average Australian, I'd say. In a positive way, I mean.
Yeah. And like, I can always paint the picture of, oh, you know, it's a dangerous situation. There's all these diseases and there's, you know, these challenges and blah, 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 blah. But in many ways, you know, they're living a really beautiful life and they're, you know, they're engaged in another culture. They're playing outside a lot of the day. They're learning languages and, so I just need to keep trusting Jesus with that, which is most precious to me, because he's the one who's brought us this, or he's given us the grace and he's given me the grace as mum to do this. Like, I just have to trust him. And it's a daily moment by moment thing when, you know, even those moments where your child is not acting like you want them to be acting and you're like, oh no, it's all my fault. I brought them out to Africa and, you know, I can't do that to myself. I just need to keep trusting Jesus. He is the one, the master sculptor of their lives, the one who is going to weave this all together in a beautiful way. And so it's a daily trust thing and trusting that he's graced us all for it.
I really love that. That's great. Yeah. And I think as well, like, we can listen to that and go, oh, but it doesn't matter where you're placed in the world, there's going to be challenges for our children regardless growing up, right? Yeah. And there's going to be things that we need to overcome alongside our children. It doesn't matter where you are. So that was really encouraging, Nadia.
And I honestly think in some ways I have some things easier than mums in the West, and that, okay, I live in a shipping container and we don't have a washing machine, but I have like sweet house help ladies who help me with, like, they cook for all of the building team and they help with all of my chores around the house. And, you know, I can definitely see the unique blessings of where I am as well.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I have another question. I know, you know, choosing to go back onto the field with kids in, you know, after having your second, your little girl, but just in general, you know, it could have even been prior to that. How did you overcome sometimes the unknown? Because I know often we go, oh, I feel like I'm meant to be doing this, but I'm not sure. And I feel like I want a sign, or I feel like I want something, confirmation. But sometimes we don't get that. Sometimes we do. But has there been a moment that you could maybe share where, you know, you've kind of overcome the unknown, or not been certain but still walked faithfully forward? Like, is there some way you can encourage us or share with us something you've learned in regards to that?
Yeah. Cass, you were present in my wrestle to go back this time.
I was like, not trying to say pinpoint that time.
You told me wrestle with it this time, because, yeah, it was definitely hard for me to – yeah, it's always, okay, am I going to trust you again, Jesus? And it really was hard, but he's gentle and he gives us time. And I think the thing that I was super thankful for is the organization that we're with as we were wrestling through the decision and some of the security situations and unique challenges of the location that we were proposing to return to. They said, okay, let's have a prayer and fasting day. And we as all, like, your kind of your church, we want your church bodies to fast and pray. We will fast and pray as an organization. And we met on Zoom in the morning. We prayed through things together. And then we went aside for the day and said, okay, we'll spend time with Jesus and come back. And to see everyone get a unanimous yes by the end of that day,
amazing,
was huge and very significant. Even an old missionary who is in the area where we are now serving in the 50s, he's now 97, he called the next day after that prayer day and said to me, all right, what was the answer? And I said it was yes. And he's like, yep, that's what I got to. And so to have lots of other people pray with us and also get a resounding yes. It's like, that's what the church is, you know, we're meant to be sent out by the church. And to have other people who've gone before you, other people who've been praying for you also get that yes was huge for me. And I also finally got my yes that day, like that you can do it from the Lord, like the gentle and yeah, and for other people to get that yes, that was huge. But I've struggled with fear, and I've struggled with everything that that we as mums struggle with. I'm just an ordinary mum as well who like worries about my kids getting sick, and I hate it when the kids get sick. I worry about, you know, going over there, you know, the things that I'll miss out with in family life and friend life. And and one of the hardest things for me is like being away from grandparents, but you know, following Jesus is not always it's not the easy path, and it's not always it's not the most comfortable choice, but it's beautiful and it's right, and for us that's how Jesus has called us to follow him. And so I just need to keep trusting that, you know, he is going to continue to provide in those areas that I'm fearful of or worried about. you know, not being there for family and certain things and all that, he's faithful. And I just need to keep trusting that.
Mm. No, that's good. And I like what you were saying there as well. Like, you got the yes that day, but it took a bit of time to get there. We don't always have the yes straight away. And
the other thing, sorry, Cass, I'm just going to interject. The other thing with that yes is that that is such a moment that, because I'm sure that you have, like, you, it's not like, okay, that one thing happened and now everything is like smooth sailing. I just yes, yes, yes to everything. But you have that moment to look back on and go, yeah, no, it's okay. I've got my whole church family with me. Jesus is with me. It's, you know, and so it's like a, would have been a really impactful into the future kind of thing that happened as well.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, totally, totally. And I did, like, there were times where, you know, particularly during COVID and stuff, where I was like, oh God, I feel a bit trapped where we are right now. Like, we can't really get out at the moment. And like, you know, the times where you feel lonely or just so far away from people that you love and you long for, you know, the loved, your loved and your known, the known people. And it's like, you go back and be like, okay, no, this is who God has asked me to be. And I just trust you, Jesus. I trust that this is right.
That's awesome. Yeah. So, well, we're running a bit out of a time, but Nadia, I just want to emphasize, I really love the wisdom that comes from you. You know, that you guys are all for about church community and having people that have gone before you to impart the wisdom and to guide you along that. I think it's really important when we're thinking of how do we serve God, or where is God calling us to be, or what does life look like serving Jesus. We actually need the people around us that have godly wisdom to help us on that path. Yeah. I think that's really important. And I think sometimes we can become a lone ranger and just go do our own random things, but actually, no, God calls us into community. And I love that you shared that part of it, Nadia. That's really important. Yeah. Before we wrap up, do you have like some nice, not that anything hasn't been nice that you've said, but any like little celebration stories recently from on the field, or just I guess some of the fruit that you could share with us? Putting you on the spot, sorry.
I think like just before we left, Chris had finished a building project, and we slaughtered a goat and had a big celebration with all of Chris's workers and all of the ladies who'd helped and carried water for the project, and
awesome.
The ladies who cooked for it and everything like that. And they were just so thankful. They were so thankful to be part of a project like that. They were thankful to kind of be included into our family, and they all gave speeches, and they all had big plates full of so much food, and they were so happy. And you know, it was in some ways such a simple little celebration, but it was really special just to gather together in our new little community there and see what God had done it in the last 18 months since we've moved to that location, and giving us kind of people who were our friends. And I still really want to build more friendships, but for me, I always just get excited when I actually build a genuine friend in the cultures that I'm serving in. So yeah, that's an encouragement.
Yeah, having that community, so you've got something to look forward to come back to as well, hey?
Yeah.
That's great. So how can we be praying for you, if anyone?
So we are like 4 days, 5 days out from returning.
Oh, wow.
It took us 13 days to get here.
Wow.
Crazy.
There's 3 flights, and there's a wait in the capital city, and there's a big long car trip from the refugee camp to where we currently are, and that car trip is on roads that are very boggy at this time of the year. So it's not mm-hmm. the best time to be driving on that road. So I would just love you guys to pray for journey mercies. Mm. My brothers and sisters there would call it. Because yeah. we travel. Because
you're saying the car trip is like a good day.
The roads
day,
are tricky. Hey?
It's like a good day or two, isn't it, that car trip? It's a big...
Yeah, in dry season, it's like 8 hours and it's not too bad. In wet season, it could be a couple of days. So we we've got that ahead of us. And the kids were so good on the way out. They just didn't complain once. They loved Amazing. It when we got stuck. And they, they did wonderful. That's grace alone.
I was going to say, that in and of itself, the fact that kids didn't complain is a solid supernatural miracle.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So the same kind of grace going back in would be wonderful. And just that we would continue to be very wise in how we serve, and that we would know what the Lord wants us to pick up and what we can do, because we really can't be doing everything. We can do a few things, and particularly me, I can do a few things on top of homeschooling and things. So that I would just have wisdom as to what I say yes to.
I imagine would be
And that we would
hard.
Continue to be good friends.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's great. So praying for more connections, community, friends, praying for wisdom, and praying for just a safe return and an easy, smooth return. Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Nadia, for joining us. I love hearing you speak and share your heart for South Sudan and just for the mission that you're on. I think it's beautiful, and your family are such a testament to, you know, picking up your cross and following Jesus, but also the joy that comes alongside that, you know, and the fruit. And I think it's really beautiful to see that and the way it outworks in your lives. So, Kirsty, do you want to?
No, I was just thinking about the fact that I said at the start. But that is very good. Thank you so much. That was really, really helpful. A lot of good gems in there of helpful ways to talk about mission and helpful ways to think about mission as well. So we will definitely be praying for you. And also, girls out there, when you're listening to this, they will be back to where they're serving God. So at the end of this podcast, it would be great, once you turn it off, to just pray for them.
Yep. Take the time aside and pray. I agree.
Thank you, girls.
Yeah, it's the best way. And look, if you're someone listening, you're like, I really want to help out, I really want to practically help out, you can reach out to us and we can give you some further information on how to be able to support these guys financially. But like, for, I know Nadia is all about prayer support is really important for them, as we all know. So thank you for listening, ladies. Thank you, Nadia, for joining us. It's late at night over there in America right now.
My joy. I love chatting through this kind of stuff. And
God has gifted you with pearls of wisdom, and we very much appreciate your time, and we love you guys a lot, and I miss you. My husband
love
misses you
too.
Guys.
I miss you too so much.
Ladies, thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate your time. We appreciate your support. If this is your first time listening, or if you don't already, please feel free to subscribe to however you're listening to this podcast. Leave a review, share it with your friends. That really helps us. The algorithm is not working in our favor. But when you do things like that, then new people can hear about the work that we do. And hopefully more of the gospel and I guess discipleship will be happening as we grow. And we just also encourage you to follow us on Instagram. That's probably where we find out most of the information about our show and what's going on. Anyway, I just kind of brain fried halfway through that sentence. Sorry, I'm a bit clunky right now. Anyway, such is life. But thank you for joining us, and we will chat to you next time.
See ya.
See ya. Bye.